but we're much better than what we showed against them, and this is what we're going to show them tonight. No doubt in my head. Let's go, guys. Go.
Listening to the 90 Plus Podcast. Here's your hosts, Ben Righetti and Sebastian Pereira.
Woo! That new intro is still fire. Thanks, Caden Fanshawe, for the new intro again. We're here at episode 21 at the 90 Plus Podcast. Myself, Ben Righetti, as always, joined by my wonderful co-host, Sebastian Pereira. And we've got a little bit of a different looking episode structured for today. Obviously, the MLS has announced what the rest of the season is going to look like. The Whitecaps have six more opponents. Some we face twice, some we face once. So I figured we'd get some guests on to talk about each of the teams that we've got lined up. Three guests today, three guests in episode 22 coming out in just a couple of days' time. So be sure to stick to the 90 Plus Twitter at 90 Plus Podcast to see when that comes out. But in terms of today, Sebastian, who do we have lined up for episode 21?
That's right, Ben. We got three guests here tonight with us. We have Alex Vejar covering RSL. We have Jamin Moore covering the San Jose Earthquakes. And Alicia Rodriguez covering LAFC. And once again, thanks to all three again for joining us for this episode. It was great to talk to them. Great to get some inside scoops from these three teams that the Whitecaps will obviously be facing in the coming weeks. But yeah, overall, great people to talk to, and we really enjoyed talking to them. So once again, thanks to them for their time, and yeah, I hope you guys enjoy as well. I mean, a lot of info packed in there, and yeah, we're hoping to get the next one out, as Ben said, pretty soon in the next couple of days as well. So make sure you guys enjoy these first three interviews, and check back later with us for a preview of the next three upcoming interviews at the end of the podcast.
All right, welcome to our special Whitecaps preview special, looking at the rest of the season. Myself and Sebastian, we got a few reporters and a couple other people based around the Twitter sphere. And yeah, our first guest, we're very excited to have on, Alex Vejar from the Salt Lake Tribune down in Utah, covering Real Salt Lake. It's been an up and down season, I think, for both clubs, Vancouver and RSL. Alex, welcome to the 90 Plus Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I guess really just sort of diving straight on in here. We'll start off nice and easy and just to kind of set a big picture sort of look for this, the rest of this interview. Describe your season in a word or two. How has this year gone for you guys?
In one word?
Or a couple.
Yeah. I think it's been hectic. So hey, I got one word in. there's been so much off the field drama happening with this team that a lot of times the on field stuff might get overshadowed. But if we're just talking about on the field, I think that, you know, RSL is, they're above the playoff line, eighth place. I think that they obviously would want to be a little bit higher, but they haven't played well at home, so, and that's usually where they kind of make up all of their points. But you know, they're, it's a weird year for everybody with the pandemic, you know, all this stop and go, so they've been handling it pretty well. But they've really had a up and down season, but you know, I'm not sure how different that is for the rest of the league.
Yeah, I guess just going back to, I mean, what you said, the problems off the field as well, that's been a major talking point for RSL this season. And I mean, just to dive straight in, like, to the more important stuff, obviously, given what's going on in the States right now. I mean, how has the Delroy Hansen situation affected the play of the players during the season, and also maybe the coaching staff? Have you seen that affect maybe the players in some games?
I actually haven't, and that's actually a good, it's a good point, it's a good question, because, you know, there might be some teams that kind of let that off-the-field stuff affect you know, their play on the field, but it really hasn't for this RSL team. You know, last year, Mike Pecky got fired and they lost their general manager because of some drama, and they ended up playing really well and, you know, making the playoffs, finishing third in the West, which was, you know, their highest finish in a few years. And, you know, I think that this year with the Deloitte Hansen stuff and with the Andy Carroll stuff and, you know, the sale of the team, which is, you know, that's in the process right now. You know, they really haven't, I don't really think that has affected them on the field at all. I think that they're a group that's, you know, really relying on each other. They really kind of rally behind Freddy Juarez and his coaching and all that stuff. And, you know, the locker room is really good. So they're really just kind of focusing on soccer now, you know, whether or not they play good soccer, you know, some games they have and some games they haven't, but I don't really feel like the off the field stuff is really affecting the on field product right now.
And just before we hop back over and talk about the on-field stuff, players and everything, in a nutshell, can you just kind of describe the Deloitte Hansen situation for those of our listeners that might not know what's going on, and then sort of give either your take or just kind of your thoughts on the situation as a whole?
Yeah, so Deloitte Hansen is currently selling Utah Soccer Holdings, which includes the three teams that are in Utah. So that includes Real Salt Lake, the Utah Royals, which is the NWSL team, and the Real Monarchs, which is the USL team. It also includes Rio Tinto Stadium, which is where the Royals and RSL play their home games, and it includes the that big academy slash training facility that they have. It costs like $80 million or whatever, but that's included in the sale too. That's where the Monarchs play their games, and that's where a lot of the teams practice and things like that. So he's selling it because there have been some allegations against him saying some, you know, racist remarks while he's been owner of the team. You know, the NWSL and MLS are investigating him in regards to that. And, you know, some stories have also come out about Deloitte Hansen's involvement in creating somewhat of a toxic workplace culture. That's where Andy Carroll, the chief business officer, comes in. He was involved in that as well. So, you know, in terms of from an organizational standpoint, the team is really kind of in a transition period. You know, there's no telling when the sale is going to happen. You know, I reported that, you know, there's a local buyer or a local person who's interested in buying the team. He recently did a tour of the facilities. You know, so things are in motion in that sense, but yeah, that's been what's going on. It's been a fun few weeks for me as a reporter.
Yeah, for sure. Not every MLS season you get to cover something like that, but yeah, we're glad to hear that there's a new owner coming in, obviously. You mentioned the Monarchs there as well, and I think that's, from an outsider looking in, it's been a big part of RSL this year with the inclusions of Michael Chang and Douglas Martinez getting promoted to the first team. Is it something maybe the fans have been crying out for, given how much success the Monarchs have had in recent times?
I mean, I'm pretty sure that fans were very happy to see, especially Michael Chang, you know, see the field, and he, you know, he's got a goal and a couple of assists. If I have my stats right, I hope I do. But Michael Chang in particular has been a revelation for this team. You know, every minute he's on the field, he impacts what's going on with RSL positively, especially on the offensive end. And, you know, he was with the Monarchs, you know, usually, you know, some of the younger guys are on the Monarchs, but he's 29 years old, and he has fit in seamlessly with the first team in an MLS. So that's been a really great thing for them this year. Douglas Martinez, I believe he was signed last year, but he didn't really get much playing time with the first team. This year, he's gotten a little bit more. He's had a concussion past few games. I believe he got some minutes the other night, but you know, he's also a guy that they really like. You know, he can stretch center backs, and you know, he's tall and he's young and he's fast, and you know, I know that the team really likes him. But you know, he's just like a lot of other guys. He probably just needs to see more minutes, but I think those two guys in particular are going to help them in the future.
And I guess sort of moving forward and getting, you know, reverting onto the field here, RSL, for the majority of this season at least, have played a 4-2-3-1, and it's been like that for quite a while now. In Vancouver, we've, you know, for our listeners and anyone in the Whitecaps media knows, it's been a bit of a carousel in terms of the formations and what we're looking at and all this sort of stuff. You guys, you know, you've been consistent. You found something you liked. You found something that works. At least it seems like it's working, like you said, right, hovering around the playoff line. If you were Freddy Juarez, Alex, if you were Mr. Juarez, would you keep that, or are you making changes to the lineup in terms of who's coming in to start? Or if you, what could you, if you were given the chance, who would you or how would you affect this starting 11 that we typically mostly sort of see for RSL?
That's an interesting question. I cover soccer, but I'm not a tactical guy, so I don't really know if I can answer that question really well. It's interesting that you say that Freddy Juarez has used a 4-2-3-1 most of the time, which he has. He did try a 4-4-2 diamond a few weeks ago, and it failed miserably. Like, it was okay for like 60 minutes, and then it just failed, and he had to revert back, and that was just a really bad game for RSL.
He tried to throw it back to the good old years, right?
Yeah. I think I remember what he said in terms of going diamond that day was he was kind of dealing with a lot of rotation in his lineup, and they were just kind of end up with two forwards or something, or that's what they had available. So he decided to try it out. You know, he asked Kyle Beckerman and Tony Beltran, you know, who've played that system before, what they would think about it. And they decided to try it. And, you know, it didn't work. And he admitted as much. But, you know, a lot of fans really want to see Giuseppe Rossi play more. You know, I think that if I were a fan, I would agree with them. You know, he's been good in the minutes that he's given. But, you know, he's also been injured, and RSL's lineup is really interesting. The fans really want Freddy Juarez to like do certain things with the lineup, play certain guys, substitute, you know, as they would substitute. But Freddy just, you know, he sticks to his guns, and Freddy is the ultimate tactician. He's a very, very gifted soccer mind. So for me to just say like, hey, he should do this, like, he knows way better than me.
At least you're humble, you know, way to be honest.
I guess just throwing it back as well to the game, I think it was about a week ago that the Caps beat RSL 2-1. What can we expect in the rematch of that, of those two teams on October 10th, when I think it's RSL that'll be making the trip to Portland to take on the Caps? What do you think RSL might do differently? How will they approach the game differently against the Whitecaps next time?
Well, you know, the game against the Whitecaps was interesting because they were coming off a really abysmal loss. So, yes, they lost 2-1, but they played a lot better. You know, they got themselves a goal. You know, they were in it. They just played a lot better. So I really just kind of think that in the one coming up on the 10th where they're traveling, I just think that it's going to be more of the same, you know. The Whitecaps might change their formation, like you mentioned, Ben, that they've done a lot this season. I don't anticipate RSL doing that. RSL is a type of team, and they have been the last couple of years, where they really kind of focus on what they're doing. You know, what can they do better? What are they doing well? How can they tweak this or that? You know, and I think that when it comes to sort of seeing an opponent a second time, I think they really try to just learn from not just the last time they played a particular opponent, but sort of they like to build off of their most recent win or loss or draw, whatever it might be. So you know, the travel has been weird, but it's weird for everybody this season, you know, with COVID and all that stuff. So I don't anticipate that being much of a problem. I just kind of think that you're going to see the same old RSL, and in terms of how they're going to play now, who they're going to bring out in the starting 11, I have no idea. I don't even think they know at this point. They're really focusing on Sunday's game against whoever it is that I always forget, against Minnesota. There's so many games that I always forget which one.
It's quick and fast now.
Mm-hmm. It is, yes. But, you know, I kind of just think that they're just going to focus on themselves like they always do. And I think it'll be interesting to see whether or not it works.
And just wrapping up this interview here, as time's starting to crunch down on us, in your opinion, like you said, you guys are hovering right around the playoff mark. It's a very tight and competitive Western Conference right now. 3 points could, you know, do wonders for any team at this point. Do you see RSL making the playoffs and potentially making a run, or is it just, you know, not pieces aren't quite in place yet, or where do you think RSL finish off the year?
I think that RSL is going to have a difficult time making the playoffs comfortably. Mm-hmm. So, you know, last year it was comfortable for them. The year before, they had to wait until the last day of the season. And I really think that it's going to be like 2018 again. They're going to have to wait until the last few days of the season, because this, and it's hard to predict, right? You see all of these weird results and all across MLS this year, you know, there's no fans in a lot of these markets. You know, sometimes that can make the difference between a win or a draw or a loss. And, you know, RSL, they're not playing well at home this year. Like I mentioned before, they won their last home game, but they lost their previous two. They're not getting a lot of fans out there, 4,000 here, 3,000 there, you know, so it's really almost like everybody's playing on neutral ground. And I think that does affect things a little bit. And RSL they're really up and down. Some games they're not scoring for two or three games, you know, one goal in three games. And then sometimes they can just score five. But it seems to me that there are a lot of good teams in the West. And if they continue to struggle at home, it's going to be really, really hard for them to make the playoffs this year. I really think that they have to figure out how to get a win or two, you know, at home, because it's not like they're winning on the road either. You know, they've drawn a lot this year, which doesn't help when the standings are tight, like you said. So I think it's going to be a struggle for them. Hopefully they get in. You know, obviously they want that, but I think it's going to be really hard for them this year.
You got a prediction for the upcoming Whitecaps game just before we wrap up here?
For the RSL versus 3 weeks?
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's see if I can.
Don't give us a score. Give us a win, lose, or draw. You don't have to give us a score.
Win, lose, or draw.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Makes it easier.
All right. So they're playing Minnesota, and then they're playing LAFC, and then they're playing Seattle, and then they're playing.
Wow.
So if I project after three games, will they win? All right, I'm going to call that a draw.
Okay.
Okay. Solid.
All right. We'll take that. The Whitecaps are yet to get a draw at all this season, so
I think we'll take that for sure.
A point on the road, even though it's at home, you know, we will take that.
Mm-hmm. Throw you guys a bone.
Thanks. But yeah, Alex, thanks for joining us here on the 90 Plus Podcast. It was great having you. We obviously wish you the best of luck covering RSL, and we wish RSL the best of luck, just not against the Whitecaps.
Yeah. Most of the time.
But thanks so much for coming on. It was great having you on, and yeah, good luck.
Appreciate it.
Thanks. My pleasure, guys.
All right, we are back, and we are joined by our second host, covering the San Jose Earthquakes. Jamin Moore from Quakes Epicenter is joining us for our special Whitecaps preview of the rest of the season. It hasn't been a great season, so, you know, we're clinging on to these sort of big previews while we can, not, you know, playoff hopeful. Jamin, before we, you know, rag on about the Whitecaps more, welcome to the 90 Plus Podcast.
Oh, thank you, Ben, Sebastian. Very excited to be here. Thank you so much for the invite.
All good. And so we saw on Twitter, you sort of said that you were coming on the show, and again, appreciate the promo. You said that you were talking the third wheel derby, and we just talked quickly before we started recording here. For most of Vancouver Whitecaps Twitter, we haven't really heard of a whole lot of this third wheel derby. Do you want to explain the origins of that?
Yeah, well, quick, Twitter can be a little bit lively, and we have the long running rivalry with the LA Galaxy, as you know, called the Cali Classico. And as soon as LAFC joined the league, all of a sudden the Galaxy fans didn't care about us anymore. They only cared about beating LAFC. and maybe they felt a little inferior or something like that at the time. And so they have now their little Classico, and we were assigned apparently the Vancouver Whitecaps during rivalry week. So our fans came up with the Third Wheel Derby in order to try to put some punch behind it. You know, if you guys remember, in 2017, you eliminated us from the playoffs 5-0.
Best game in Whitecaps history.
And we've never lived it down. I just want to let you know that. So every game since then has been a revenge game.
It's good to know that Glass City is still putting work up here for Twitter on us for the Whitecaps side. Good to hear it.
No, and that was hands down the best Whitecaps game ever. I was there myself, and that's just like, in all Whitecaps fans, it's like the memory for everyone. Like the 5-0 against San Jose, to say I was at the game against, that's like saying I was at Anfield for like Liverpool okay. Barcelona.
Okay. Typical Liverpool fan. We're 3 minutes into recording and you've already brought up Liverpool.
Like, yeah. Yeah,
we have a guest, Sebastian. Come on.
All right, let's get into it then. Let's get into it. So, Jamin, this season it's been full of ups and downs for San Jose, also the Whitecaps. But San Jose, like, you know, they raised some heads at MLS's back. They got a pretty deep run in the tournament. But unfortunately, it just hasn't quite looked the same since Orlando. Maybe just start off with, like, how the performance at MLS's back went for them. I mean, obviously, they got massive wins against big teams, and they almost made it through to the semifinals, I believe. What did you think about them in Orlando?
Well, that was kind of a watershed moment for the team when they made it to the quarterfinals. Obviously, there was the big comeback against Vancouver, and it did get the team, I think, going. They had earned a draw in the previous game against the MLS, you know, champions, the Sounders, and got a 0-0 draw from that. It built some confidence, I think, in the club that they could compete. They were the first team to get into the bubble at MLS's back. And I think it really, considering Matias Almeida's style, his ethos, all the philosophy that he has and what he's trying to instill in this club, it was the best possible scenario for this team to have 2 weeks together before the tournament started. And as soon as things got going, the team did well. They had the confidence to be able to come back down 2 goals against the Whitecaps. Sorry about that. That was our revenge, I guess, for 2017.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But and then they took care of business against the Chicago Fire, and also then had a really great game against RSL. I think it was a 5-2 game, if I remember right. And then they ran into Minnesota United. Now, Minnesota United was a team that they had already played at the beginning of the season. It was the second game of the season. And Adrian Heath has just had Matias Almeida's number. Like, he either it's just a poor matchup, or, you know, he's kind of figured out the man-marking approach that the Quakes have. But, you know, regardless of the situation, his teams have always matched up well against Matias Almeida in the last couple of years. And, it was kind of, I think, the beginning of reminding the league how to beat the Quakes. Last year, I believe it started in a game against Columbus where Caleb Porter was able to really spread the field and kind of get everyone to start chasing all over the place, their markers. And the Quakes players would just follow. You know, the center backs would get pulled way out of position and stuff like that. And it became a blueprint for why I think the Quakes collapse happened toward the end of last season. This season, I think that particular game was a very similar situation. The other big thing that happened was Magnus Eriksson's last game. And Matias Almeida, he went back to Sweden. And Matias Almeida has not been able to identify that 10 to really kind of take his place. Now you add on things like the wildfires, and you add on COVID, and you add on the compressed schedule, and the team that is hurting the most from a fitness perspective, and now with 4 center backs on the injury report, is the San Jose Earthquakes. And so, you know, they've just looked really poor. They had a decent effort against the Galaxy with a draw there, a decent effort at home against Colorado, earning a draw there, but besides those two games, it's been big loss after big loss in the last two. have both been big losses now, and they haven't scored two goals in a game in like eight games now. So they've struggled offensively. They struggled defensively. They've had difficulty playing out of the back. It's just been one thing after the other for this team.
And then, like you said, it's compressed schedule, and it's like that for every team, and every team is going through traveling, playing in front of empty stadiums, especially like, you know, the Whitecaps and the other Canadian teams having to come down, finding our new home in Portland. It's a season where it seems like anything can happen. And from a San Jose perspective, are you considering this a lost season just yet? Or is there still a little bit of hope that, you know, string a couple of random sort of wins together? And it's a tight Western Conference standings right now. 6 points back to back can, you know, really take you a long distance at this stage. So are you calling the season where it lies already, or do you think there might be a little bit left in the tank and possibly a playoff push for the Quakes?
I don't believe playoffs is in the cards for this team. There are, I believe, 6 points back of RSL right now for a playoff spot. I don't think so. And I don't really even think that Almeida and general manager Jesse Fiorinelli are looking at it that way. Ever since MLS is back, Almeida has been playing the young players because of the need for rotation. And to me, it's a bit of a hashtag play the kids. Now, a lot of people didn't feel very good about that, given the fact that the team was sitting in a playoff position at the time. But Almeida began to see that there was no way they were going to be able to play through this stretch of playing, you know, basically every 3 days or so, and be able to keep up with the schedule without playing his kids. I wanted it, but I actually wanted it slightly differently, particularly wanted to see a goalkeeper change. Daniel Vega has struggled all season. Even when the Quakes were doing well, his overall numbers have not been very good. He had a good 2019. But 2020 has been a real struggle for him. And the guy waiting in the wings is JT Marcinkowski, and has been now for about the past 3 years. Got a shot for a little bit in 2018 when Mikel Starry left the club. He was the coach at the time, and Steve Ralston came in, and he did okay, but he's really matured in the last 2 years, and the club, the fans particularly, really want to see him. Normally, he would get a lot of games in Reno, which is the Quakes affiliate, and that's just not happening because of COVID. He's only played one game. Daniel Vega has been between the sticks for every other game, and it baffles both us as media and the Quakes fans as to why this is the case. That's one place where we wanted to see some changes and haven't seen them. Almeida has stuck with Daniel Vega in goal, a fellow Argentine who was one of his players when he was at River Plate in South America. And another player up top, Andy Rios, was also a player that Almeida had back in the day. And those are two players that the Quakes would like to, Quakes fans would like to see a lot less of, and would like to see other people in their place. But there has been this kind of focus on the youth movement. And now I think in order to really kind of figure out the roster situation for next season, they're going to keep playing some of these players that really haven't seen a lot of field time outside of Reno 1868 FC, and have been kind of hidden from view from the fans and from everybody. Now that they're getting put onto the big stage, a lot of them are struggling and stumbling, and I think it's going to cause some big turnover. I believe something like 12, 13 contracts are going to be up at the end of the season. And so people are playing for contracts and playing already, I think, for their spot in the roster for next season.
Yeah, and we know it's MLS. I mean, obviously there's a lot of contract options at the end of each year. And I mean, for us Whitecaps fans too, it's like, play the kids, see what they can do, and maybe they earn their contract for next season. I mean, now with the shortened schedule, there's only 10 games left for every single team now.
Right.
So it's time for players to prove themselves and win their contracts, obviously. I think just going back a little bit to the JT Marcinkowski stuff, I mean, from the outside looking in, I've been quite surprised not to see him in net, because I've heard very good things about him, and I think that's been a surprise. I've seen him make unreal saves before, so it's been a surprise to me to keep seeing Vega in goal. But just moving forward with, I guess, who your best player has been, moving over to the positivity, I mean, we've seen Christian Espinoza has put in some decent performances this year. Obviously, Wando doesn't look like he's losing his age at all. He's continuing his goal-scoring record. And that guy, Shea Salidas, is still running around.
Looking like Messi when he plays the Whitecaps, right?
Only for in the 98th minute and after. He's this weird thing. It's this weird thing in his game. It comes up all the time. That's why we got rid of him.
He does it to the Galaxy too. So he shows up for only two teams every year, and that's pretty much Vancouver and the Galaxy.
But we're honored. We're very honored.
We wanted to stop though. but I guess in your opinion, who has been the standout player so far for the Quakes? I mean, as I said, Espinoza has been very good for you guys so far, but in your eyes, since you're there at every game mostly and you're watching them, covering them, who has been the one player that you'll say, okay, that guy's definitely someone this team can build on going forward?
I'm really excited right now about the left back situation, and I never thought I would say that. Marcos Lopez.
That's alien right now to Vancouver.
it's alien in a lot of MLS clubs, and it's been alien for us for about the past 6 years or so as well since Jordan Stewart left. But, you know, the left back has not been a strong point for the Earthquakes for a long time. Last year, I thought they made a really good move, and they got a player by the name of Marcos Lopez out of Sporting Cristobal. Mm-hmm. 19-year-old Peruvian, just got also named to their World Cup qualifying roster for the first two games in South America today. And he's really earned it. He was injured at MLS's back, so you guys didn't get to see him earlier this year. And last season, he struggled quite a bit, made a lot of, you know, mistakes that a 19-year-old is going to make on a soccer pitch, right? And from a club side, he had played mostly as a left winger. But for the national team, he's played left back, and that's how the Quakes scouted him, was seeing his national team performances. So they signed him as really to be the left back. But I think, you know, Almeida is finally kind of the philosophy and some of the one-on-one defending, and also a real confidence, a quiet confidence on the ball that just surprised everybody, is what we've been seeing from him this season. And, you know, he's a progressive passer. He likes to try stuff and create stuff going forward. Now, most of the rest of the team has underperformed around him, but he's a bright spot for the team. The other guy who stood out is 16-year-old Cade Cowell. Cade, you know, he looks like he could be the real deal for the club. I think a lot of people would like to say he's the next Alphonso Davies. You guys know all about that. but I think the comparison that, you know, Matt Doyle made is a little bit more apt for his style, which is, that he compared him to Jordan Morris, a bit of a straight ahead runner, got a bit of pace, you know, as a academy player, played at the striker position, now a winger. What I think we would really love to see is the way that Jordan Morris has blossomed in the last couple of years, both for Seattle and for the national team here in the U.S. We would love to see Cade Cowell follow that example. The difference is Cowell is 16 when he's bursting on the scene, whereas Morris was quite a bit older when he got noticed when he was playing like 20 for something? Stanford. Yeah, he was like 22, I think, playing for Stanford mm-hmm. when he got a start against – or got his opportunity at least against Mexico. I can't remember if it was a start or not. But I remember him playing down in Texas against Mexico. And, you know, that's kind of when he showed up for the first time. So, you know, if we can see that kind of maturity, I think, from Cade, you know, who knows what his upside is. He could definitely have an opportunity to go to Europe in the future.
So let me get this straight. In San Jose, there's a team that's lacking a 10, an interesting battle at left back, and lots of young kids coming through. This is really sounding like Vancouver's bread and butter right now. And I guess sort of just before, as we start to sort of wrap this little chat up here, for you, Jamin, if you're Mateus Almeida, what's your starting 11 looking like in terms of formation? Is there anyone you're going to be giving more minutes to or less minutes to? How would, if you were, you know, in charge of sort of what you would see night in, night out on the fields, how is that sort of shaping up?
I mean, it's what Matias is going to do versus what I would do. But, you know, if I had my druthers, what I would see is, you know, JT Marcinkowski in goal, maybe give an opportunity to Matt Bersano, who's you know, also been excellent in Reno when we've gotten the chance to see him there, but hasn't gotten the opportunity on the big stage yet. But play those guys, and let's start to figure out who the goalkeeper should be going forward for this team. To me, that's really important, is to get the spine right. If you know, the center back situation gets a bit healthier, we'd like to see Alanis playing at the left center back. We'd like to probably see Flo Youngworth playing at the right center back. Right back, Nick Lima is kind of resurging again when he's gotten his opportunity more recently to play right back. Tommy Thompson really struggled, was at fault for three of the goals against Colorado a couple nights ago in the 5-0 loss there. So Nick Lima at right back, Marcos Lopez at left back when he's not at national team duty. We have, you know, Jackson Ewell and Judson, both quality players in the central midfield there. The question mark kind of being who's in front of them at the 10. You know, that could be a Tommy Thompson. It could be an Eric Calvillo. You know, there's a couple different options there. It also was something that they kind of tried Cade Cowell at the other night. Didn't really work that well. He really, I think, needs to be the winger, or he needs to be the sole nine. Of course, we want Chris Wondolowski to be able to play the nine, but from a starting perspective, I like Danny Hoosen still. Danny still has that ability to create something from nothing, and he also has the ability to run and make some runs off the ball and stretch out a defense. And I think that's really important for whomever the 10 is. And then on the wings, of course, Christian Espinoza on the right. And then on the left, it can be a Shea Salinas, you know, on the left, or Vaco. Is a designated player, just hasn't performed up to, you know, what he typically does around this time of year in previous seasons this season, but he could break out at any time. Typically plays pretty well against the Whitecaps. Wouldn't be a bad time for Vaco to probably get an opportunity when you visit Earthquake Stadium next week.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jamin, it's been great having you on the show. We wish we could have you on for longer. Maybe that's something we do in the future, obviously, maybe like a joint podcast or something, but
sounds great.
But yeah,
next year we can preview the third wheel derby now that we know what it is.
Yeah,
now that you realize this is the biggest rivalry in MLS,
the more you know, learn something new.
Exactly, we will definitely have to
The amount of marketing opportunities there are insane. Huge.
We're breaking news for Vancouver right now that this is happening.
You need to get behind this derby. This is the most important rivalry
in
MLS. So
good. Well, good to know.
For sure.
Definitely. Well, Jamin,
we wish you the best of luck. We wish the Earthquakes the best of luck. Obviously, not against the Whitecaps, but of course, we hope you continue to do well during COVID down there as well. And yeah, thanks for joining us here on the 90 Plus Podcast.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate the time.
All right, we are back, and we are pleased to announce our third guest for today's episode, our last guest for this episode, again, part two coming up in a day or two's time. Myself and Sebastian are joined by Alicia Rodriguez, formerly at MLS.com, currently at SB Nation. Alicia, thank you for joining us here at the 90 Plus Podcast.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, good. So obviously you're here, you're talking LAFC. It's LAFC, you know, you guys are used to being up near the top of the standings right now. Even, you know, given it's a very tight Western Conference, you guys are sitting at sixth right now, only 3 points away from first place. So all to play for, really. What, in your perspective, in your mind, what excites you the most heading down the last stretch of the season for LAFC?
Well, there's a lot of games. So basically every game, you never quite know what you're going to expect. I think this season in particular, we know in MLS that you're bound to see some odd results, some, you know, peaks and valleys in terms of form. But this season, just being such a weird year and such a weird season, as far as the scheduling and whatnot, you know, to me, it's going to be interesting to see if LAFC can kind of get out of the slump that they had been in recently and kind of finish strong. And if not, kind of how the rest of the season goes, if they're going to continue to struggle or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess a big part of LAFC kind of having that bit of a slump you talked about over the last couple of weeks or so is not having, obviously, Carlos Vela, the MLS MVP, but also Edward Atuesta, a guy who's basically grown into his role and really made that center defensive mid his own. And he picked up that injury against Orlando down in MLS's back. How important is it to have him back in the starting lineup? I mean, we've seen it even here from Vancouver, the fact that he can just spray the ball all over the field. We even saw it in the Whitecaps game the other day in the first minute where he just sprayed a ball right off the kickoff, and that's where LAFC got the corner from. So how big is it to have him back in the starting 11?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we saw his quality in that game the other day against Vancouver. You know, he had been out for several weeks, and he had started coming back the last couple games before that off the bench. I mean, even in those cameo appearances, you could see like a rise in quality for him. I actually think that LAFC have a plan in place for when Atuesta is, you know, going to be sold on to a club in Europe. They have a couple players coming through, and they've been getting playing time. Also young South Americans and Francisco Janela and Jose Cifuentes. Having said that, I think, like you said, I mean, you can see Atuesta's quality when he steps on the field, and you can see that there's still a gap in, you know, between what he can do and what some of the other players can do. His passing is great. He's able to cover a lot of ground. He plays a two-way game exceptionally well. And, you know, it's one of those roles where he's not making that trailing run to score the goals. You know, he's the guy that makes the pass, three passes before the goal.
Yeah.
You don't usually, you know, remember kind of his role unless you're looking for it, that kind of thing. But he also plays an important role in defense. And so I think he's really pretty indispensable for LAFC. For now, he's with the team, and I think they're going to enjoy that stretch as long as possible. But again, I think he's somebody who's likely bound for Europe, you know, in the medium term future.
And you just briefly mentioned there the defense, what he brings to the side. When people think of LAFC, they typically think of high-flying, flashy offense, that sort of stuff. But meanwhile, your defense, purely just looking at some stats here, it has allowed the third most goals in the conference. Do you think there is enough balance for it to work? Like, score enough goals means you can allow a couple in at the back each game? Or do you think some changes need to be made at the back?
Well, I think that's part of the style that they play. They're not a team. I mean, obviously, if you talk to them, if you talk to Bob Bradley, if you talk to the players, you know, the intention is always to get a clean sheet, right? Like, that's, you know, every team wants to do that. But I think more than most teams, I think that they have an allowance that, okay, we're comfortable scoring four goals. So if we allow two, then it's not the end of the world. Ideally, we want to allow zero goals, but, you know, again, if it's a 4-2 win, that it counts the same. That's no big deal. So I think that they understand that they're taking something off the table defensively in having such a high-powered attack. At the same time, like you said, the defense is allowing a lot of goals right now, and that's definitely something that's concerning because they're allowing too many goals. They're losing games, so, you know, that's not good. To me, the issue is, I think about half of their defense at present is really, really strong. So Diego Palacios is starting left back, and they actually go three deep at that position. So I think that position's covered pretty well. Eddie Segura is a center back, and I think he's been, you know, pretty strong again this year. He's a steady guy, and he's somebody who I think had a really good season last year, is first in the league. But then the right side of defense, I think, is a real concern right now. Tristan Blackman is usually playing one of the two right-sided defensive positions. He's been hurt lately, so that hurts them even more. And then right back has kind of been a revolving door because of injuries and sort of availability of players and then that sort of thing. So to me right now, there's a concern with the half of the defense, basically. And I think if they either get some guys back and get them healthy, or they sign somebody, particularly at center back, you know, that they could use another person, you know, back there, especially somebody who's starter caliber. I think that would go a long way to allaying some of those concerns, but I'm not necessarily holding my breath that that's going to happen. So I think we're going to see kind of a Wild West in the back, you know, for for the foreseeable future.
For sure. And I mean, obviously part of the Wild West in LAFC is Diego Rossi and Brian Rodriguez, two players that have, I mean, obviously Diego Rossi's been doing it ever since he arrived in the league, but this year he's just taking it to another level. Brian Rodriguez has also emerged as a starter now, and he's trying to find that finishing product as well. They've both recently been linked with moves to Europe. How long do you think we'll see them in MLS? And they obviously both got called up to Uruguay, which is big for both of them. So it looks like they're not going to be here in MLS for much longer.
Yeah, that's the big question. And I think in a normal year, we'd probably say, oh, in the next window or two, you know, one or both of them will be gone. But given the fact that we're, you know, the seasons are all shifted around, the transfer windows are moved around, and I think that the market has kind of fluctuated in mm-hmm. response to the pandemic, I think it's really hard to say. My hunch is that I don't think that both players will be around for another year. Like, if we're here in a year's time, I don't think that they'll both be on the team anymore. But I'm a little more inclined to think that it's possible given how unstable things are right now. I think Rossi's a player who's been, you know, really lights out for LAFC the whole time that he's been in MLS, and he continues to get better. So, you know, he started off really strong and he continues to get better. And I think his call up to Uruguay's national team that you mentioned, it's his first one with the senior team. And I think it's really well deserved. You know, on a personal level, it's like really exciting to see him be able to get that call up. So, mm-hmm. And then in the case
we've been begging it. We've been begging it for years now. So it's great to see him.
Yeah, exactly. And then in the case of Rodriguez, you know, he's a regular for Uruguay already. And he's obviously starting every game for LAFC, but like you said, the finishing touch is not quite there. You can kind of tell that the rhythm is not quite in sync with the rest of his teammates all the time. You know, I think he works really hard, but there's just, you know, a little something that's not quite falling into place for him. But if he's like flying for Uruguay and he's scoring goals regularly for them, I mean, you know, teams in Italy in particular snap up players like that all the time. So even if he's having some bumps with LAFC, I think he's probably a player who could be sold pretty easily. And the big thing I think for both players is LAFC, I think, wants to make a profit on both players. So they're not going to settle for a low ball, you know, bid at this point and just say, oh, cause we need to get rid of them. No, they're going to make sure that they get some sort of profit. I think probably the margins are changing a little bit again, because of the way the market's working right now. But I certainly do not see them settling on either player and saying, oh, okay, we're okay taking a loss for him. They're definitely going to sit until they get a profit, and if they get the right number, then I think they'll go for it.
They need the money. They want the money for sure.
Yep. Show me the money.
Yeah.
And sort of like you said, there's plans potentially for Europe moving forward and stuff, or a couple of players there. For LAFC this year, who has been sort of a nice surprise for LA, kind of coming up out of the woodwork, maybe someone that maybe injuries or whatever may not have originally been given, you know, much sort of hope or credit for to start off, but kind of over time built up either a trust or, you know, just a strong foundation within the side? Is there anyone that kind of sticks out that's came out of the framework this year for LA?
Well, I think in recent games, you know, I mentioned him a few minutes ago, but I think Jose C. Fuentes in particular has been pretty impressive. I think when he arrived in the offseason, he was hurt a little bit, and Bob Bradley said that he was kind of timid when he first came here. You know, he's from Ecuador. He didn't speak any English, and he needed some time to get acclimated. I feel bad for the guy that he had to do that in the middle of the pandemic shutdown, but, you know, that's how it goes, I guess. But he's been playing really well lately. And I think him and Janela both have a lot of potential. Like I said, I think, you know, Janela had a little bit of a tough game a few games back, but he's also been really strong. He started the very first game of the season out of necessity for LAFC, and to put a young guy in his first game playing in the Champions League, you know, in that spot, and him coming away pretty well, I think, you know, says a lot about him. So I think the midfield is in good position moving forward. Obviously, those guys need to, you know, continue developing, and they have some growth, you know, yet to do on a number of levels. But to me, that's that's an area that I'm not necessarily concerned about, because I think that, you know, when some guys get moved on, they'll be able to pick up the slack pretty easily.
Yeah, I agree. I see like shades of Atuesta and both Cifuentes and Janela from time to time. Obviously LAFC is coming off a huge win against our team, the Whitecaps. We weren't too happy about that, obviously, but what were your thoughts on the game, and like, what is your prediction for the next matchup, which is in a couple weeks' time, to finish off the season?
I think that's one of those games where it's just like that. Like, I think that was the easiest win that LAFC have ever put up, and I'm not saying that in the way to the Whitecaps. Yeah. I mean, the first goal goes in, bang. Okay, we're up. Yeah, feeling good. The next goal goes in. All right, this is mm-hmm. great. Okay, feeling good. You know, and it was just like one after another after another. It was just one of those days where like everything came together. And I think to an extent, the Whitecaps can take some heart from that, because teams are not bound to be as lucky at just every shot going in the first 15 minutes like that, usually. So that's what I mean when I say that I think it was the easiest win, because I mean, it just, everything went right for LAFC and everything went wrong for Vancouver on the night. As for the next game, it's hard to say, because these teams are playing like twice a week, every single week. And, you know, one game they're up here and the next game they're down, you know, way down in the dumps. And I mean, it's honestly, the games are coming so fast right now that it's, I feel like it's really hard on the players. I feel like it's hard on the coaching staffs. I think it's hard on, you know, pretty much everyone to try and keep an even keel, to keep a certain, you know, level high enough on a consistent basis. So, you know, obviously coming in, given the ways the season has progressed for both teams, given sort of the talent level of each team, I would say LAFC are, you know, inclined to be favored, but
for sure,
you know, I mean, we really don't know. Like, I would not be shocked if the Whitecaps won 3-0, you know, like, it's one of those seasons that
it's 2020.
Exactly. I mean, I think anything is possible, frankly. So, you know, that can be scary and that can be fun, and, you know, we'll have to see what happens.
All right. Well, Alicia, I think that just about wraps up. Hey, just running out of time. Thank you so much for coming on, talking LAFC with us, closing out this sort of season preview halfway through the season. We're sort of special we've got going on here. But again, it's been lovely to talk to you. You know, learned a lot. Thanks again for coming on 90 Plus.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Thank you very much. All right. Well, with the conclusion of Alicia Rodriguez's interview, that's going to wrap up episode 21 here of the 90 Plus podcast. But don't worry, we've still got some more guests lined up in the next couple of days. Sebastian will break those. You'll break them.
Yeah. Just imagine like a brick. I'll just break.
Yeah. All right, try again. All right, we'll go again here. All right, and with that, the conclusion of Alicia Rodriguez's interview, that's going to wrap up episode 21 here on the 90 Plus podcast. So like we said, we covered RSL, San Jose, and LAFC. We've still got a couple more teams to go, so hopefully we will have some more guests lined up. We do have more guests lined up coming out on Sunday's episode. Hope you guys have enjoyed this sort of different sort of structure. And Sebastian, you want to talk our listeners through who we have lined up in for next episode, episode 22 of the 90 Plus podcast.
Of course, yeah. And we got in the next episode a little bit of a Cascadia theme going on here. We got our Cascadia rivals to talk about. William Conwell is going to talk with us about the Portland Timbers, obviously the team that we will be sharing a home field with. 2020 in a nutshell.
Plus, that game. This episode's coming out on Sunday, and we do play them on Sunday, so we'll have a bit more of a preview sort of thing to open up episode 22.
For sure, yeah. We're also talking to Nico Moreno. He covers the Seattle Sounders, and from time to time, he's also covered the Whitecaps as well. So we'll have a good chat there. And we also have Josh from the Corner of the Galaxy podcast. He's obviously reporting on the LA Galaxy. They've been firing recently with the return of Chicharito, and Christian Pabon is also in that lineup as well. So, yeah, it's going to be another great episode. And once again, thanks to the people that came on here in this episode, episode 21. Once again, special thanks to Alex, Jamon, and Alicia for coming on. We had a great time with them, and best of luck to them for the rest of the season, obviously.
And Sebastian, just before we wrap up episode 21 here, where are we going to be posting when episode 21 and episode 22 and all our other episodes and all our previous episodes, where is that all going to be in one convenient page, maybe?
There are actually two convenient pages, Ben. We will be posting all this on Spotify and SoundCloud. So obviously links will be on the 90 Plus Twitter. You can follow us there at 90 Plus Podcast. Myself and Ben will also be reposting the episodes and posting them on our Twitter feed as well. You can find Ben at Rigetti Ben. I got it right this time.
He's learning. He's learning. Yes, it's taken him 21 episodes and God knows how many hours of recording, but he's got it.
The duck is broken. I think I broke that duck quicker than the Whitecaps did the scoring when they started.
Had to slide that. Close to ending the episode.
Had to. And also, you can find me on Twitter at SebastianP74. But yeah, once again, guys, thanks for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed this special episode. And make sure to tune in for the next one, obviously, on Sunday before the Portland Timbers game against the Vancouver Whitecaps. Thanks, guys, for listening. Cheers.